Now you have it, now you don't. It's the Medicare policy that would have paid physicians to advise patients about end-of-life care and other advanced care planning during annual wellness visits. Hi, welcome to the Bioethics Channel. I'm Laurel LeBou, and joining us now is John Carney, the Vice President for Aging and End-of-Life at the Center for Practical Bioethics. So first it was in Medicare, and it went into effect January 1st of 2011. Then it was withdrawn just a few days later. A little bit of a political game, I guess, being played?
Yeah, unfortunately it is, Laurel. It's really kind of sad that we've had to use advanced care planning as a political football, but that's really what has happened in this case. What really the impact, however, to patients and families should be, I'm hoping, minimal. It doesn't say that doctors cannot have these conversations. It simply basically doesn't allow for an extra payment to be made for doctors who want to engage in this voluntary conversation. They won't receive a special allotment of funds to be able to have that conversation. But it doesn't prevent anybody from having it.
So the issue was that there was some, as part of putting the regulations together, some of the protocol was not followed properly?
Yeah, I think the administration has admitted that in the proposed rule for the inclusion of this particular item as a covered benefit under Medicare, it was not articulated. It wasn't included in the proposed rule. In the final rule, when the final rule came out, there was information about that this was going to be a covered benefit and was going to be paid for. And there were people who objected to the fact that it wasn't included in the proposed rule so they could comment on it, make sure that it was worded and phrased in the right way and that it was properly described. And as a result of that, then the administration, I think, took that to heart and said, then we need to pull it back and not offer it because they were fearful that it might provide, I guess, ammunition for the folks who were opposed to it as one more bit of evidence that the repeal of the health care reform needs to happen.
Then this odd situation with the congressman sending out an email to his supporters and saying, keep it under your hat and don't publicize it too much.
Yeah, I think the original proponents of the measure during the time that health care reform was being considered in the legislative part of it, there was good evidence that we don't do this as Americans. We don't have these kinds of conversations with our doctors. And I think there was some genuine attempt on his part to include this as something that should happen between a doctor and his or her patient. And it got politicized at that point, kind of referred to as the death penal, discussion during that time frame. And then it was basically pulled from the Senate version. It did pass the House version, and this particular representative was in the House, obviously. And then it got pulled from the Senate version because it became political. Then it was really silent for a long time, and there was kind of an attempt, I think, for the reintroduction of that through the regulatory process when the regs were finally issued. And that's a two-step process. One is the proposed regs and then the final regs. And it was during the proposed regs where it wasn't done, and then he was working with some members of the administration to include it, reintroduce it as a regulatory effort, not a legislative effort, which the administration has the authority to do. And then what happened was it skipped the process of getting put into the proposed reg so people didn't see it. And so, you might want to look back and say, well, that's a minor hiccup. I think for the fact that it had been so politicized during the legislative process, that was probably not a wise move. And I think that, unfortunately, the transparency that was being claimed, you could point pretty pointedly at that and say this isn't transparent at all by trying to skip the process. And it really has taken its toll, and I think it's become a political football, and the administration just realized that.
There has to be a level of frustration, though, within the end-of-life community about this seeming victory where end-of-life provisions would be included in Medicare policy, but then have it yanked out again.
Yeah, I would generally assume that most folks who are interested in promoting advanced care planning discussions between doctors and patients would find this as a disappointing move. I think what it may, though, prompt us to do, those of us who believe this is important, is look to other solutions other than a payment from Medicare to a doctor to make this happen. I think it really challenges us to say this is a fundamental issue that we need to integrate into healthcare decision making for all patients and families, whether or not it's through a regular Medicare visit or a physician visit that Medicare pays for or not. This is just something we need to integrate into the fabric of our healthcare decision making. And so it challenges us to say, you may have lost this round, but that doesn't mean that the challenge to really figure out how to do this right still remains. And so, I guess I could look at it and say it's disappointing, it's frustrating, this shouldn't have happened, and I would agree it shouldn't have happened. It doesn't take away the need for us to do it, and it may challenge us to get creative about how we get it done.
So now this kind of provision within a government kind of effort has probably in some views been tarred, and to try to get it through a government kind of function will be something that would be very difficult to do in the years ahead.
I would agree with that. I think that the clinical decision process, the intimate relationship between a doctor and a patient, and maybe not so intimate in cases where you don't know the doctor well, but certainly the responsibility of the kind of the covenant relationship between doctors and patients is really where we should focus this discussion. And that's a right place for it to happen. I think the politicization of it happens when you take a payment system that is a political decision, Medicare, Medicaid, and you capture it in saying, well, this is a covered service or not. And I think you're right. I think that there's kind of – it's been sullied. The notion is really kind of, off the table for now. And we really need to think about other ways to make this happen. But, it's still something that as a patient faces advanced disease, the progression of a disease process or a diagnosis is maybe difficult for a family to accept. These kinds of discussions still need to happen. And it's unfortunate that we don't identify it as a legitimate need for patients and families. It's kind of supposed to be included elsewhere, and unfortunately in our system we don't do a very good job of doing those things unless we get payment for them. So that challenge remains, but the fact that if we're going to really reform good end-of-life care, if we're going to provide better kinds of services to patients and families, this discussion still has to happen.
Just not in a government realm.
Not within a specific set-aside payment for mm-hmm. this particular discussion. It's going to have to be integrated into other forms and relationships or episodes of care in which the physician says, we need to sit down and talk about this. Unfortunately, though, for many of them, and the way that we structure our healthcare system, those discussions don't happen if they're not recognized and paid for. But I think you're right. I think it's going to be a long time before this gets resurrected and seen in any other way.
Death panels will be attached to that for a long time. And it will be up to the individuals, you and I and people out in the general public, to be able to actively engage physicians to be part of to enact this discussion.
Yeah, and I think it's still a big question mark whether or not patients really have the resources and awareness and understanding of their own disease process to be the people who bring it up first. I think it happens as a matter of routine from recurring episodes of usually acute hospital admissions for people in frail elderly states or advanced disease states, which isn't, again, the best time for that to happen. And so what we've got to do is figure out, so if it's the responsibility of a healthcare provider to bring this up and not the patient, when does it get brought up? And if it's in a kind of a non-crisis moment, then how does that get incorporated into the regular visits with the doctor? And I think the other thing is to understand it as, well, maybe this really ought not to be, in a sense, medicalized at all. This is about values and preferences, about the way you live your lives and the things that you consider to be important for your family. And so those social dimensions need to get integrated into our family discussions and those kind of things, and then we take it upon ourselves. So I think you're right. I think shifting this emphasis back to the patient and family is not a bad thing. I think the problem is that most of us don't have these conversations until we're well into a particular diagnosis or possibly facing a crisis. And that's really not the best time to have that conversation.
John Carney is the Vice President for Aging and of Life at the Center for Practical Bioethics. My name is Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.